Here we are,
dude. It's been a while.
Same room in a long, long time. I'm still flipping formats and trying to figure out what the hell's wrong with the RSS feed and all of that fun stuff, because you can only go back a certain amount, and I don't know why, but we'll figure it all out. But Right. Here we are at Scary Dad.
In the same room, once again, back together.
So how you been, man?
Not too bad. Hanging in there as best we can during this time of COVID-19.
Jesus. Then again, I saw somebody posted the History Channel and National Geographic was like, people are scared because of the Trumpness and the Supreme Courtness and the virusness and all of the, you know, all the stuff. And it's like, everybody's like, it's the worst time ever. He's like, no. Like, there is an actual measured history in time where it was been the worst time to ever be alive on the planet, and it was AD 536, like that specific, because what happened was in AD 536 there was a volcanic eruption in Iceland that dimmed the sun for like 18 months, and it caused crop failures like all the way across Europe and China, so people died of starvation like crazy. And then right when it was starting to recover, about 4 years later, there was another eruption in a different spot that cooled the temperatures again, and it messed everything up. So for about the decade between 536 and 546, there was rampant disease, war, famine, like all of the stuff. And they did not have Netflix or Amazon.
Right. Well, all these people, you don't even have to go back that far. All these people that are like, it's like slavery. I'm like, no, it's not.
You didn't even ask to stay home in your house or whatever?
Yeah, it's not. Having to wear a mask isn't like being a slave, I promise.
The funny thing about the mask, you hear about the lady that got tased? Yeah. She was like at a football game, they're like, put on a mask. Like, the players don't have masks. The cop arresting her doesn't have a mask on.
Well, his mask fell off. To be fair, his mask fell off because she was resisting. But
dude, like...
Yeah, it's just... everything is just insane. But honestly, I mean, me and my kids both, I kind of like the mask. I like wearing the mask in the store. Nobody stops to talk to me. It's like, it's a certain amount of anonymity now where I can just go in and get out. It's nice.
I think if they want to continue this, they just need to issue Cobra Commander helmets or like the Cobra Trooper helmets. So you walk around with a blue helmet and a black mask. Because, yeah, at first I was like, the masks are pretty cool. It gives you that little bit of anonymity. But I got the beard and the glasses. So, like, basically I'm constantly itchy and blind. There's just no way around it. And
well, my only thing is when it's people that actually want them to recognize me, they don't know who the hell I am.
Yeah.
And I forget that I have a mask on and I'm waving, wondering why they're not waving back, or they're looking at me like I have a foot growing out of my forehead.
Or you're poking fun at, you're poking fun at a kid or something and they can't tell
that you're smiling. Yeah, like I was doing the other day. I was trying to make a little girl laugh and I realized it just looked like some freak making eyes at this poor little child. But yeah, it just... I'm just ready for everything to be over with. I'm ready for the election to be over with. I'm ready for everything to be over with. Because, as we've talked before, social media makes people so emotionally invested in shit that they become just unbearable. I have so many friends now and people that are just, they're unbearable to deal with. Uh-huh. It's like, come on, just get off of it just for a day.
Dude, the social media, like, I have to because of the author stuff and, right. You know... But I swear, either I've just blocked or unfollowed enough people over the last couple of years to where I just don't have any visibility to anything anymore. But when I go to Facebook, it's nothing but ads anyway. So, like, I pop in to make the posts for the podcast or post for the book or whatever, or like, hop into a discussion group and say hi. But, you know, it's like, here's something interesting. So... at the beginning of this whole pandemic stuff, there was all these people who are like, oh, you could use this time to spend time with your children. You could use it to learn a new skill. You could learn it. You use it to learn a new language or whatever. And I took that to heart because like one of my biggest problems with employment, having a job and having a homestead and having children, it's like I never got time for
you. Never had time for everything else, right?
And you know, I got two podcasts and I write books. I'm like, I've got a lot of hobbies, so I'm not complaining. But you always have those moments of like, man, if I just had time, if I just had time to do stuff, right? And so then the universe spins around and is like, here is all of the time you can possibly handle. And everybody uses that time to bitch about Trump on the internet. So, like, I've actually picked up my guitars. I went back through and was like, hey, you know, at one point I was a pretty decent guitar player and I could sing. Then I blew out my voice. And once my voice was gone, I was not as good a guitar player without being able to sing and play guitar at the same time. It's like, well, if that's all you're doing, why can't you be better? Your energy's not focused. So I went back and I'm starting to pick up all the theory that I left behind years ago that I was just like, you know, I'm just a whatever. So I'm learning scales. I'm learning, you know, like movable modes. I'm learning all kinds of cool techniques for speed. Teaching my kid how to play the ukulele. You know, like I'm actually doing things. Mm-hmm. And then, but you have to turn off the damn internet for a while in order to, or use it for good. Like, go to YouTube and skip all of the CNN crap and look up the guitar teacher who's teaching you how to do stuff, you know?
Don't fall into the rabbit hole of conspiracy theories and political BS. Just skip through all that.
And just know that...
It's insane.
Just know that you can't... You couldn't change it anyway.
So I keep trying to explain this to my kids. I'm like, look, this is the worst it's ever been, honestly, in my opinion, as far as political discourse before a presidential election. But you hear the same shit every time, okay, just to different degrees. Mm-hmm. I explained this to my son years ago. The only thing that ever changes is the date. Doesn't matter who's in office. That's all that changes is the date. They're all the same. Yep. Just relax with it. I mean, there's nothing that we can do. The people on your side are going to try to get you to think everything's going to be doom and gloom if the other side wins. It's been the same way for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the date changes and that's it.
Yep.
Everything else is the same shit.
That's exactly how I feel about it. Again, there's the two most liberating things you can do. Is turn off the damn TV and stop paying attention to politics.
Yeah. But then I got my daughter who is at that age where, you know, what I was when you first started learning about politics and feeling as though, you know, you have something you want to believe in. So she's starting to get invested into it too much. And I'm always having to sit her down and say, look, let me explain to you exactly. When Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, mm-hmm. I had to sit down and explain to her. And she was like, oh, no, if this happens, you know, this is... I'm like, let's talk about what the Supreme Court does. So we sat down because they don't take civics anymore. Mm-mm. They don't teach any of this shit to the kids. They just they find out everything they want to on Reddit and TikTok, whatever they go on, and that's where they get their political ideology from. So I had to sit there. I've been with both my kids, just sitting there trying to explain all this stuff to them, and it's been fun. I'm able to kind of open their eyes a little bit, but my daughter like wants to, and I keep telling her, I said, look. What you got to realize is getting mad at somebody and yelling at them to try to understand where you're coming from, it's not going to make them change their minds. It's just going to make them angry. Even if you approach it in a, you know, in a kind way, they're going to take most 9 times out of 10, they're going to immediately get defensive, dig their feet in, and push back.
Dude, and you know what? That doesn't happen just with politics. Like my wife and I got in a fight the other night. You know, what I know over what we got in a fight about.
Tomatoes and gumbo.
Agreeing. We agreed. We were like we thought we were fighting because it was weird because we were some friends of ours went and did a thing this weekend. They went camping, right? So and so's got a camper and then you can rent the cabin and it costs this much per night for this many people and blah yada yada. Well, we're going out of town next week with the same people. So we're like, look, you know, with me not out of a job, like, well, we're still kind of like, we don't need to go spend another, you know, $800 to do this, even though, you know, it sounds like it would be fun, but the responsible thing is to not do that. So then time passes, and it's like, okay, well, what if we just go out there for the day? We just go out there and hang out with them for the day. It costs like $80 instead of like $700 and something. So we could just go out there, and the kids can swim, and we can just have a grand old time. All right, that sounds good. Like, let's do that. So then she looks up, and she's like, okay, she's anticipating, because this is usually what would happen, is we get out there, we're hanging out with our friends, people start drinking, we find ourselves a couple hours away from the house, and then what's our alternative? What's our fallback? To which I was like, well, I didn't really care about it enough to go to begin with, so let's just not go. And she was like, I don't think we should go. And I was like, yeah, I don't think we should go. But we just said it in the wrong way. And so she thought I was saying, like, whatever, dude, make a decision. I don't care. And she thought I was being like, I think we should go, but I don't want to do all this. We sat there and argued for like half an hour.
When you were actually on the same page.
And then finally I was like, dude, are we arguing about something we actually agree on? Like, we're not arguing about something we're on opposite. She's like, I guess so. I'm like, this is dumb. Like, I'm going in the other room. Like, you know. So yeah, you don't actually have to disagree.
All right, well, let's go ahead and get everything started. We're going to be skipping old business today just because it's kind of a last-minute thing. We realized we could get together today in person and decided to go ahead and record a podcast. So, Mr. Gomez, if you would lead us into the new business.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
All right. I know you didn't grow up quite the wrestling fan that I did, but I was just, you know, a ridiculous wrestling fan back in the day. And you may have heard, we got our beers already prepared, Joseph Laurinaitis, who was known as professionally as Road Warrior Animal, passed away recently at the age of 60. Now, the Road Warriors were just one of those wrestling teams that eventually became known as the Legion of Doom when they moved over to WWF. But they were one of those larger-than-life characters that kayfabe, which is, you know, the idea of wrestling, the wrestling character becoming part of your actual life and everything, doing the playing the role and stuff. They did it beautifully, man. They
I remember them being on the backs of comic books.
Yeah, they were everywhere, like, man. They were well known. I mean, they came out with football pads with giant spikes coming out of it. They came from that time period where, you know, you had Ultimate Warrior, you had when Sting first came out, when all these wrestlers. And Vince McMahon kind of took this to the next level, but originally in the WCCW, NWA, they started realizing, you know, let's get the, basically they wanted to get guys that look like He-Man figures, like I mentioned a while ago. So they found all these just huge guys. Now, half of them couldn't wrestle for shit. Ultimate Warrior, I'm looking at you right now. But a lot of them, like the Road Warriors, they actually had skills, you know, that they could do the work. As they put it, they knew how to take a bump. They knew how to give a bump. They were exceptional. And just take a drink for Road Warrior.
Sure.
Of course, Road Warrior Hawk passed away, I think it was 6 years ago. So now they're together once again. So.
60 years old, man. It's so young.
Vince McMahon was pumping everybody full of steroids when they were in the WWF, dude. These guys just have very, very low life expectancies for the most part. Especially the ones that were just the giants in the business, you know? You got people like Jake the Snake Roberts that didn't really give a shit about his physique and everything. He's been smoking crack for the past 20 years, but he's still kicking it. He's still actually wrestling on the circuit and everything. So.
I used to joke back when I smoked all the time. It's like, man, you don't ever get sick. I'm like, nah, man, the freaking tar catches all the germs.
All right, just a little bit of horror movie news. It's been reported that the Candyman sequel, of course, is going to be delayed for release until 2021. No new date selected as of yet. It was originally supposed to hit theaters this past June, then it was moved further back into 2020, and now it seems the plan is going to be 2021. So, be announcing a date. It seems as though, from what people are saying right now, the main reason Jordan Peele, because right now actually is a good time to release a movie when it's not in lock. Look what's happening with Tenet. Tenet is like doing, set a record for Labor Day weekend and shit.
But it's also the only movie that's up.
It's exactly. So now is a good time to release a new movie because people want to go see something. You know, even though you have limited capacity at theaters, everybody in the theater is going to be watching your movie because it's the only one that's new. My sister saw Tenet, by the way. My daughter, she loved it. She thought it was a fabulous movie.
Awesome.
Jordan Peele kind of came out and gave the reason for the delay is actually he doesn't want to encourage people going to theaters right now. He's one of those people that's taking the coronavirus very seriously. He doesn't want to be one of the ones that's making people, you know, do things that he doesn't feel as though they should be doing, which is interesting because, you know, he could be making a killing right now, yeah, releasing a movie now, but he doesn't need any more money anyway. He's got plenty, I'm sure. All right. Let's get on to some just weird, wacky world. We're going to talk about Donor 9623. Okay, you maybe wonder who Donor 9623. To many mothers, approximately 36, I believe, all they knew of Donor 9623, they didn't know a name, but they knew that he had an IQ of 160, spoke four languages, and was pursuing a doctorate in neuroscience engineering, and that he looked like Tom Cruise. At least that's what the bio at the sperm bank told them about Donor 9623. Come to find out, he never even finished college. In 2014, the sperm bank accidentally revealed this guy's name to the donors. His name was Chris Agilis. Come to find out, he'd been donating sperm for over 14 years, had been used for 36 children, and they started Googling this guy. It found comments he made online about hearing voices. They later found out he had been hospitalized for mental illness, had been on disability, was suicidal at one point, and pled guilty for burglary, all before and during the time he was donating sperm. So the sperm bank is facing 36 lawsuits right now. And I'm like, I understand why they're angry at this point, but you got a child that I hope you love out of.
Right. You know, like, you loved him on a Tuesday, and then you got and you're like,
you know, that just,
you just found out that your fine collectibles are reproductive. You're just like, get outside and mow the lawn. Put the book down, go outside.
Okay, recently, have you seen the videos floating around on Twitter right now where, you remember a spot that robot dog from Boston Dynamics?
Yep.
Somebody released it into a neighborhood. There's all these Twitter videos right now, people freaking out because all of a sudden they're walking down the street and there's nobody's around. This robot dog comes up to them, backs up, you know, starts acting like the AI robot dog it is and just taking back off down the street. And so people are like freaking out. There are people saying that hollering to shoot it. There are people thinking that robots are taking over. But if you get a chance, go ahead and look for some of these videos that were put out. It was released in some neighborhood in Canada.
Was it like a test or something?
Nobody knows. They just have all this footage floating around of the damn robot dog flying around.
A couple nerds got drunk and decided they're going to go out.
Now, apparently the four-legged model has been available to the public since June for the price of $74,500 to buy just one. Meaning that it may have actually belonged to a private citizen who was just messing with people. But, yeah, so check out some of the videos, man.
Did you ever see that Black Mirror episode with the dogs?
Well, then people started bringing up the Black Mirror stuff because it looks just like it, except it's yellow. It's
like, I lost touch with Black Mirror because we had a period where our Amazon wasn't working right on our TV. But I need to go back and watch it because that couple of episodes of Black Mirror stick in my head the same way as something like Tales of the Dark Side and Creepshow did. But dude, that episode of Black Mirror is probably one of the scariest little anthology clips. I mean, it fits in there with all the old stuff from back in the day,
right,
like the one
right
with the robot dogs. That was disturbing, and I mean, it sticks with you because you just, I mean, they won't go away.
Okay. When I was growing up, one of the things that we'd get threatened with when I was young is everybody knew that the insane asylum in Louisiana was located in a small town called Pineville, Louisiana. Just a little small country-ass town. And that's what Pineville was famous for. My mom would tell me when I was acting bad, I'm going to take your ass to Pineville and get a bag of rice and a bag of dry beans. Because back in the day, they used to say when you brought somebody to Pineville, they would give you some food. And they'd give you a bag of rice and beans. So that was the running joke when I was growing up. So just, you can picture what this town is like. It's just a little hole-in-the-wall town that's famous for an insane asylum. Okay. A police officer from Pineville, Louisiana, where is his name? John Michael Gould. He was quoted by a television station as saying, "There were shots fired at me. The officer didn't return fire on anybody. He was exiting the patrol vehicle at the shopping center whenever he was ambushed by an unknown person at this time, and two shots were fired, one striking him and the other hit the vehicle." Okay, so he was going around saying he was ambushed, all this other shit. Come to find out, the department announced that an investigation had led to the determination that the officer had actually shot himself. Concealed it and altered the facts. He was getting out of his car, and apparently somehow his gun went off twice. Oh, wow. His gun went off once, shot himself, and then he shot into the car to try to make it look as though somebody had shot
him. Somebody shot him.
Yeah, so I thought that was hilarious. This little shitty-ass town in Repeats Parish in Louisiana. This isn't the first time it's happened. It's happened to other jurisdictions, mainly in Florida. Yeah, we've seen cops shoot themselves and then try to blame it on unknown.
Hey, have you ever seen that video of that cop shooting himself in the training class?
Yes.
Shot himself in the foot. It's a big old black dude, and he's like, yeah, talking about safety.
That's one of the early viral videos.
Yeah, he popped himself in the foot, and he's all limping around, and then they hand him a AR, and all of the cops in the class were like, whoa! Like, they're all ducking out.
My favorite one is the one that FBI agent that's in a club in Colorado or somewhere, and he's dancing, and he decides to do a backflip, and when he does, his gun falls out of his pocket, hits the ground, and goes off. I don't know if you ever saw that dude, but that was an idiot. Okay. Researchers at MIT have been testing a fascinating new technique called targeted dream incubation. Have you read about this?
I have not.
Okay. It allows them to insert certain topics into someone else's dreams. Inception, anyone?
Right.
So this is a new technology that's being tested at MIT right now. They've been testing the new technique. Targeted dream incubation allows them to insert certain topics into someone's dreams. Past studies have shown when sleepers enter a rare dream state known as lucid dreaming, they gain awareness that they're dreaming and can thus have some control over what happens in their mind. TDI achieves a similar result by targeting people during hypnagogia, a semi-lucid dream state that occurs as someone is falling asleep. At this moment, scientists introduced targeted information to the subjects of a study. The results were published in August. A study involved 25 participants taking daytime naps. Before going to bed, they would record audio prompts in the nap, such as remember to think of a tree and remember to observe your thoughts. They wore hand-mounted Dormio sleep trackers to monitor their heart rate and detect when they were in that certain stage of sleep that I can't pronounce, at which point they were most open to influence from outside audio cues. The tracker would then coordinate with the app to wake the participants up with their own pre-recorded vocal prompts, repeated several times, until they finally were able to prompt what was going on in their dreams. The researchers found that 67% of participants mentioned dreaming about trees following the prompt. So this is very interesting. What do you think? It's definitely not a good thing. Don't let the government get a hold of this.
Right. Well, yeah, because then they'll just turn everybody into psychopaths.
Right.
Dude, man.
Let the conspiracy theories begin.
See, the thing is, it's not necessarily a theory whenever you know that they're going to do some nasty crap with that.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're hearing about it means that the government's already gotten their what they wanted out of it. And now it's been modded for the general public so they can make some money off of it.
Right.
Like you said, Inception, I'm thinking Total Recall.
Right, yeah. Yeah, there's definitely another one.
It's like, you walk in, they're like, how can I help you today? You're like, two chicks at the same time, you know?
And as far as you know, you were there.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sure you heard about this story. This is kind of an older one right here, but FBI has launched an investigation after an American Airlines pilot said he saw what appeared to be a man flying with a jetpack Sunday here in Los Angeles International Airport. Did you hear about this one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they hear the tower here is Tower American 1997. We just passed a guy in a jetpack, the first American Airlines pilot states to the control tower. Okay, thank you. Were they on your left side or right side? The tower operator answers, on the left side, about 300 yards or so, about our altitude. Think about that. They're flying, and then a guy is going around in a jetpack. He's looking around. Okay, so we just saw the guy pass us in the jetpack. Second pilot from a JetBlue Airways details the tower. So there's multiple planes seeing this guy flying around Los Angeles International Airport with a damn jetpack. And then in the recording, the air traffic controller can be heard saying, only in Los Angeles. So yeah, so the FBI is currently investigating. They sent agents over to LAX to try to figure out what was going on, who it may have been. The Federal Aviation Administration confirmed receiving the report that two separate airline flight crews reported seeing what appeared to be someone in a jetpack as they were making their final approach to LAX around 6:35. Now, if I had a jetpack, I wouldn't be flying it around a busy air traffic area like in LAX, dude. I would be testing it out somewhere where I wouldn't have to worry about getting hit by a damn 747.
Right. Have you seen the, you've seen the videos of, it was, what's his name from Mythbusters, and he built the Iron Man armor, and then he installed the jetpack that the guy was using. So, and that was a couple of years ago, so I'm sure that that jetpack technology is coming up. But, like, one of those things we always talk about whenever we talk about, like, UFOs and stuff, it's like, oh, you know, it's military aircraft or this or that or the other thing. I would be excited about the jetpack. that's pretty rad. That's like Rocketeer. Right. That's all your cool stuff from G.I. Joe.
We've already dreamt about it. We've always, you know, just imagined being able to achieve that one. We're supposed to, the Jetsons, we're supposed to be able to be doing that right now. You know?
Exactly. The only problem with jetpacks and the reason they're not going to work the way we want them to work is because they just blast your legs off.
Yeah.
you still have to have some sort of you know, apparatus to hold your legs up so that you don't.
Right. I'll show in the new business with a Greenlee. This isn't a very good Greenlee. Greenlee's slipping right now. I don't know what's going on with him.
It's the corona, dude. There's not as much. People aren't out doing crazy stuff to
dude,
talk
he's
about.
He's in Florida, bro.
True.
Okay. So this week's off the beat headline is Naked Lady Swipes Intimate Item in Naughty Adventure in Fort Pierce. Okay. An alleged naked woman accused of swiping a sex toy and using it in a store got locked up, according to an affidavit. Fort Pierce police went to an undisclosed address for a disturbance. Emergency dispatchers reported a woman sporting a purple shirt but no pants was in the store. An employee said the woman removed a sex toy from the packaging and was fully nude. Here's where it's sharp but sweet, his Greenlee moment. The alleged naked lady is not to be confused with the Bare Naked Ladies, a Canadian band perhaps best known for the 1998 song One Week. That's it. Meanwhile, workers said the woman went in an employee area or stock room with the toy. In the stock room, police encountered a 36-year-old Port Salerno woman in the office chair with the sex toy. She dropped a personal accessory when the officer went in. Police learned the woman tried on a piece of clothing, but the make, model, type, brand, cut, or color wasn't specified. It's also unclear whether this was the purple shirt that she had on. Alleged stolen objects were valued at right at $46. She declined to speak with investigators. She was jailed on misdemeanor charges of larceny and indecent exposure. He's kind of slipping, man. I don't know.
It's falling off a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully he picks his shit back up once the summer ends. And maybe it's too hot down in Florida right now or something.
So when I was 16, I was working for the grocery store. It was Continental Finer Foods. It was right over here off of Kimberly and the Beltway. It was an old school grocery store. Generally older people from the neighborhood shopped in there. We had a few like younger mothers that would come in with their kids and buy milk and bread. But for the most part, it was an older, because at that time, Randall's was real big. And so we're standing there. It was, you know, Saturday, middle of the day. Hanging out, waiting for customers to come, ring up the groceries. And this woman comes in, and she's, well, she's older, but at that time I was 16, so she was probably like late 20s, early 30s, right? And she's got a t-shirt on, and it's hanging right down, like right at her ass crack. And no pants. And she's like walking around, and it's very obvious that she doesn't have pants on. Like any kind of pants, like not a bikini bottom, no, like
she's Porky Piggin.
Like, and she's walking around, and we're all, you know, stalkers and you know, grocery sackers. We're sitting there just like standing at the register, like watching this chick, like she's not wearing pants. Finally, our manager comes up. This dude's named Johnny. Dude was hilarious. comes up. He's like, what are we looking at? And we're like up the hall over there. And he's like, oh, God damn it. He's like, if I told you once, I've told you 100 times, you can't come in here without pants on. She's like, I just need this or that.
And he's
like,
she was known.
He's like, I don't care. You go home and you put on pants and don't come back. She's all pissed off, yelling at him as she left. But yeah, that has been known to happen. But he didn't call the cops on her. He just yelled at her and made her leave.
Ooh, we want to take a little break?
Yeah, take a break. We'll come back.
Belongs to our world.
We'll give him a week, see if we can call him one of us.
He belongs to hers.
But you have to learn to kill.
He belongs to theirs.
I don't want to kill.
He makes a kill tonight.
And they all belong to the night.
It's $3 short for a bus ticket home. You help me out?
What are you on?
Believe me, I told you.
Just don't think of it as killing.
Amen.
Don't think at all. It's just something that you do night after night. It's only ever a question of how.
Nervous? I would be too if I were you. Near Dark.
Could be your boys falling in with control.
Check out time.
Yourself some time, son.
God damn, this is my family. Let him go.
Near Dark. Pray for daylight. The night has its price.
Man, it is good talking to you. We took a break for a minute, and then we're just like talking
about...
Yeah,
we're about like doing an episode over during the break. Oh, man. Okay, so it was a quick put-together episode, but one thing I wanted to talk about today, and this is going to delve somewhat into pop culture also, because this guy is not just known for horror, even though he has been involved in some tremendous horror movies. But, you know, we talk about directors all the time, we talk about actors all the time, we talk about writers all the time. We don't talk about some of the unsung heroes, I guess you could say. And, you know, you have to have someone, some brilliant writer comes up, you know, with just an amazing movie that they want to see on the big screen. The problem is they got to find a way to distribute it and pay for it and actually get it done. And that's where the producers walk in. And I noticed the other day, I was, you know, it's COVID time. I'm looking for a new job, so... watching a lot of movies, you know, while I'm working, and I'm you know, I'm trying to resell items, and I'm, you know, applying for jobs. I got movies playing in the background, and I noticed the other day that I was watching some movies, and this same name kept popping up in the credits. Because, you know, back in the day, and my kids hate this shit when I make them watch old 80s movies, but all the credits came at the beginning of the movie. The beginning of the movie was 5 minutes of letting you know who was going to be in it, who directed it, who wrote it, and who produced it. And the name Vito De Laurentiis kept popping up. And I was like, wait, I got to check into this to see exactly what all he was involved in. Because it's amazing that this Italian immigrant, you know, who started in Italy. And granted, by the time he got to the United States, he was a well-known movie director and actually acted in a couple of them. But he comes to the United States, starts producing just some crazy blockbusters, and then starts his own production company where he starts distributing movies himself. And in the beginning, you know, I did my research and everything, the beginning of his production company, unfortunately, he had some bombs.
But these bombs later on to become known as some of the coolest movies that we talk about all the time. It's unreal. Are you familiar with any of with a lot of his work? I mean, he's been involved in some crazy projects, man.
I know him whenever you call him out. We were on such short notice, I didn't have time to even crack. Like, I didn't even have time to look at my phone between the conversation and us sitting down. So you mentioned it, and I was like, awesome, let's chat. Well, whenever you're naming the movies, and we'll go off on...
We'll skip all his Italian films, because like, I'm not familiar with a bunch of those, and I can't pronounce half the titles, because I don't know Italian very well. So he arrives...
Buongiorno.
He arrives in the United States early 70s. He moves on over and immediately gets involved as an executive producer for Death Wish.
There you go.
That's a pretty big movie. Yeah. You know, do you know how many sequels they have for Death Wish? Because I went down an Amazon rabbit hole the other day and watched all of them.
Was there like 8 of them?
There's 6. There's 6 Death Wish movies. Charles Bronson was like getting old. And it was funny because, you know, it was the same storyline in each one.
Mm-hmm.
Just with different... Even Danny Trejo's in one of them. A young Danny Trejo's in one of them is one of the enforcers for one of the bad guys. But yeah, he started up the damn Death Wish franchise. And right before that, he did Serpico. You know, another, you know, huge movie. 1976's King Kong. He did 1977's Orca.
I was going to say, I know we just recently did one on something, but no, you mentioned King Kong. Dude, that scene in King Kong where they're trying to get back across the cliffs and Kong is like rolling the log and like bouncing guys off of it, that is one of those scenes in a movie that will just stick with me the whole rest of my life. Like, and it's a terrifying scene because, right, you know, they're just holding on to those vines, but Kong... You know, so he's like shaking them off like bugs, and it's just like the guys are just falling into those endless ravines, and you get to fall long enough to know that you can take 2 or 3 breaths on your way down because it's that far.
I remember that movie so well as a kid because technologically it was very superior to a lot of the movies they had back then. I mean, it was compared to Godzilla, that King Kong movie that came out, the way they used the suitimation and everything,
mm-hmm,
it was fantastic the way they did it, man. I
mean, yeah, it was awesome.
It was huge.
And you mentioned Orca. We did the Jaws knockoffs episode of You Know What's Awesome. And one thing about, we were talking about Orca as far as, you know, it is not a quote-unquote Jaws knockoff. It is an absolute Jaws knockoff. Like, it would not have been made if Jaws hadn't been made.
Right.
But it is perhaps the best of the Jaws. Like, you say, if you take the Jaws range, you say, okay, well, like, superior movies. You got Jaws. You got Jaws 2, and then you got Orca.
Yeah,
pretty much.
And then, talked about it.
And then you can discuss whether or not Jaws 2 or Orca belongs in that number 2 spot. But Orca's awesome.
It's the best knockoff of Jaws that was ever made.
Yes. Well, it's got Richard Harris and Bo Derek, and the special effects are incredible, and the story's compelling, and I mean, it is a great, great movie for. Just being a great movie. Like, if Jaws had never come out and Orca
would have been a good movie.
Orca was still going to have been a good movie. But yeah, De Laurentiis.
And this is the movie that I watched the other day where his name popped up, where I first started, you know, started noticing that I kept seeing his damn name. 1980s Flash Gordon. Executive producer, Dino De Laurentiis. That movie right there is just... I love that movie so much. So far, I got it on, and it's opening up, you know. And Ming is talking, you know, I'm Cleta, I'm bored.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids immediately know I'm watching Flash Gordon. I've watched this damn movie so many times. It made them watch that opening scene so many times. But yeah, that was an awesome movie. You know, it was so underrated for so long. And I think people now have a true appreciation of just how cool that movie was.
You know what I think is bringing Flash Gordon back is the kind of revitalization of Queen.
Yeah.
Honestly, because I remember back in the day, like, I was never a big fan of Flash Gordon in general. I mean, it was on all the time. It was one of those movies that was on, so you watch it. But it was almost kind of like Spaceballs, where it was just that... What's the word? the budget of it was like, it wasn't as, it couldn't, it was not as Star Wars as Star Wars could be. It's kind of like Spaceballs, where it was still pretty awesome, but it was like less well produced, I guess. It wasn't,
yeah, as, a good comparison for that time would be comparing it to Ice Pirates,
something like that.
Yeah,
where it's like you again, like you're still like Spaceballs, where it's like they're not going to put a whole bunch of money into special effects for Spaceballs because it's not supposed to be a space movie. It's a space movie comedy knockoff sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So you still had the outer space, you had the lesser special effects and stuff like that. But it's Queen. Like, I started hearing those that Flash song on the radio not too long ago, and I'm like, wait.
Well, he was in, what was it, Blades of Glory with Will Ferrell. That was the main song that made me dance. Okay, so next year he follows it up with Halloween 2. He jumps on the Halloween 2 bandwagon. And then in 1982, two movies. One, Amityville 2, The Possession, which is a good movie. Definitely. I prefer 2 to 1. That's just me. But I find that the 2 just seems to be a movie that gets your attention more, that you don't get as bored with. It does really, really well with itself. And then that same year, he jumps on Conan the Barbarian.
And Conan is damn near hard to beat.
Right.
I mean, they did a remake of Conan, and the world didn't even blink at it. Like, a couple of years ago, they did a Conan remake. Let's say Jason Momoa.
Yeah, you don't remake stuff like
that. But Jason Momoa is, like, one of the biggest stars in the world, and they put him on Conan, and the world just ignored it. And, I mean, the Arnold Schwarzenegger, the De Laurentiis Conan is... It's a perfect movie. It really, really is. And if you think about all the stuff that came from that Conan movie, we can pretty much... He-Man came out of that. Like, a lot of the He-Man art is repainted Conan panels that they were just bootlegging from back in the day. Like, Mattel was freaking bootlegging, Conan comics and stuff. Arnold Schwarzenegger's pretty much his entire career came off of Conan. Just the Beastmaster, all of those sorts of like barbarian style, muscular dude in the woods kicking ass. Conan is the base of it all.
What's interesting is I read the other day when I was doing my research on Dino De Laurentiis, Arnold Schwarzenegger wanted to be considered for Flash Gordon. And Dino told him, he says, dude, I can't have somebody with that accent being Flash Gordon. It is just not going to work. But luckily, they ended up working together for Conan the Barbarian. So, the next year, 1983. Okay, you're going to love this one. Amityville 3D. Okay, so the third
installment. Which has one of the best movie covers ever. That big old, the three-legged demon popping out the
front. Yes, yes, yes. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, which is one of our favorites, okay, with the program. And the third movie started a relationship that would go on for a long time, but he was executive producer for Dead Zone.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So that was in 1983. The next year, I guess things were going good with the movies he had done. He pops up with Firestarter and Conan the Destroyer and Dune. I mean, this guy's been involved with so many just phenomenal projects. I mean, an Italian immigrant that was a filmmaker from Italy, did a couple of spaghetti westerns and that kind of stuff, comes to the United States and just starts getting involved with so many projects.
Is it bad that the more you mention the movies that he did, I'm thinking about how big his pool is? I mean, dude.
Okay, so 1985 rolls around. The relationship he had with Stephen King comes into play, where he produces Silver Bullet, he produces Cat's Eye, okay? He produces Year of the Dragon, Red Sonja, and he starts his own production company. Production, distribution, everything. And one of the first movies he did with that was Maximum Overdrive.
Again, I don't care out there in listening La La Land how much technical brouhaha you want to throw at Maximum Overdrive. One of the earliest things that Scott and I did was a remote podcast at a Stephen King double feature.
I tell people this all the time.
And we asked probably 3 dozen people you know, what their favorite Stephen King adaptation was, and every single one of them said Maximum Overdrive. That was against films such as The Green Mile, Shawshank Redemption, you know, like It. Like, they had all of these things they could have called out. And everybody's like, oh, my favorite Stephen King? Oh, yeah, that would definitely be Maximum Overdrive. So, yeah, is it a is it fine cinema? No. Is it precisely what it needed to be?
Yes. Yep. It's such a fun movie.
It's so fun.
I watched it with the kids the other day so they could just get an appreciation for it. It just, we made you! Okay, so 1986 rolls around. It's his first full year with this production company. And unfortunately, this is where things got kind of bad. They actually filed for bankruptcy at one point because he was backing all these movies, you know, like Maximum Overdrive, that initially were huge failures. I mean, they didn't do well at the box office. So 1986, he comes through Raw Deal, which was a Schwarzenegger movie that didn't do, it's not exactly the most, even today, it's not considered one of the better mm-hmm. movies at all. The original Trick or Treat, King Kong Lives, and he got involved with cartoon movies, where in 1986 he produced My Little Pony, the movie, and one that a lot of nerds love, the Transformers movie from 1986.
Which, I don't care about sequels or remakes ruining your childhood, the Transformers movie.
He wasn't supposed to die, dude.
Killed everybody in the first couple of minutes.
Okay, so 1987 comes around. Hiding Out, which I actually like. Remember Hiding Out with John Cryer? Mm-hmm. I actually enjoyed that movie. I got it on VHS. I watch it every once in a while. But he went ahead and did Hiding Out. And the biggest film from that year that he did, which I'm sure you'll appreciate, is Evil Dead 2.
Back on top, baby.
Yes. Okay, so 1987 rolls around, and his production company decides to go ahead and distribute a Western-themed vampire movie by the name of Near Dark. Dude, the guy's name is on everything, right? It's just, it's unreal the movies that he was involved with. 1988, he comes out and, you know, decides, hey, I kind of like this Lance Henderson guy. Let's go ahead and produce Pumpkinhead. Produce Pumpkinhead. 1989, he topped it off by co-producing with his production company, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Who would have known what that movie would have done?
Have you seen the third one yet? The new one?
No, I don't. I'll be honest with you, dude. I don't want to.
I've heard nothing but good things about it.
My daughter I'm kind of a stickler for continuity and just, you know, stuff making sense. At the end of Bogus Journey, they go on stage and they've got two sons. And in the third movie, all of a sudden, they've got two daughters. And that one little part right there just has me like, do I really want to see this movie? Because it's going to piss me off. Because remember, the two boys were Bill Jr. and Ted Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have daughters.
Maybe they went back in time and something got changed.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. My daughter wants to see it very badly, though. All right, so moving on. The final... I'm not going to say major movie, but movie that would be well known that the production company itself did was Earth Girls Are Easy, which is a terrible, terrible, terrible movie.
But it's also kind of fun.
I watched it the other day. It was on, you know, there's some of those stations on antenna that just play all these old 80s sci-fi movies and shit like that. It was actually on the other day. And it's the cheesiest. When the guys are alien, when Jeff Goldblum is an alien, he just looks so ridiculous. And he's a different color and they're the full color. It's just the stupidest looking shit that you've ever seen in your life. Okay, so at this point, 1992, his production company shuts down. He goes out of business. But he's continuing his being an executive producer of projects. 1992, he gets on board with a little movie called Army of Darkness with Sam Raimi. 1995, the low-budget Rumpelstiltskin. I don't know if you remember that, but that was a horror movie about Rumpelstiltskin, which it was all right. It's a fun movie. And then, where is it? And I can't find where it is, and I don't remember the name of it, but before... Before we had, I think it was Manhunter. Manhunter was the prequel to Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs.
He produced that. He was involved.
It was Red Dragon, but...
Yeah, but the one in 1986 that came out back then was that. So then Silence of the Lambs came out in the early 90s, which he wasn't on board for, but he did go on to produce Hannibal and Red Dragon and Hannibal Rising also in 2007. So he got involved with the with that gangbang. And then, unfortunately, he passed away in 2010. At the ripe old age of 91, after contributing a whole lot to the world of cinema.
I'm going to say, like, a lot of those movies probably wouldn't have been made.
Yeah, think about it.
He just looks like he just maybe had a quirky side. Because if you think about it, and like one of the things that Rick and I were talking about, and you know it's awesome the other day, because we were talking about like Cobra Kai, for example, and how whoever it is that's behind Cobra Kai, and I could look up the names, but I don't... I'm not going to right now, but whoever it is that's in control of Cobra Kai, both the director, the producers, and the writers, they understand what makes people love the Karate Kid movies to begin with. You know, right? So they're not... It's full of fan service, but at the same time, it's not like... It's not a parody of itself. Like, it's a serious story... It's not a comedy. They're not making fun of themselves. It's a drama. You know, it feels like almost like a 90210 sort of drama, but it's fun. And whoever's writing it understands what the audience wants. Mm-hmm. And you think so many movies. And I heard Rick Baker was on the Joe Rogan podcast a few months ago. He was talking about the reason he's out of movies now, the reason he won't do it anymore is because either he was working on that Wolfman movie with Benicio del Toro, and you know, like they hired, like, oh, we're gonna get Rick Baker on here, and Rick Baker shows up and they're like, okay, make us a wolf, and he starts making a wolf, and you got like a different dude every day coming in with an iPad being like, can we make the teeth a little bit wider, can we make them sharper, can we make the nose... He's like, dude, he's like, when it was American Werewolf in London, John Landis was like, okay, here's your parameters. I want him to be walking out. He walks on four legs. He needs to be operated where we can, like, from a distance to where...
I want a one-shot transformation.
Yeah. He gave him, like, three or four hard line... Absolute, cannot cross this line.
Don't plan on using lighting because I want it bright. I want to be able to see it.
That kind of stuff. And then let Rick Baker, who's the monster maker, make the monster, who then won Academy Awards for it.
Right.
He's like, I'm working on this one, and it's like, I got a different guy who's from the studio, who's like, he's from the marketing. Like, come on, why did you hired, and it's kind of funny because Rick Baker's so, he seems to be so humble, but at the same time, he's like, you hired Rick Baker. Why are you coming in and telling me what to do? Like, you know, like, I...
You asked me for a reason. Let me do my job.
I'm here. He's like, so too many movies are just written by committee. They're not even written by a writer anymore. They're just written by committee. And they're coming in and like, oh, can we sell toys for this? You know, is this too scary? Is this not scary enough? You know, and some of these movies, like you say, Bill and Ted would never get made now. They'll make it now because it's a sequel. But they would never make Bill and Ted the way that they made Bill and Ted back then. Just lighthearted, stupid fun without some kind of message or something. Bill and Ted didn't have a message. It was be excellent and party on.
Maximum Overdrive would have somehow become some environmentalist movie saying that we polluted the planet and caused the machines to come after
exactly.
Us.
So, you know, it's like you've got all of this stuff. Sometimes you have a guy, because again... The stuff you named off, you know, between King Kong, Death Wish, and Army of Darkness, you know, like all of these different things, it's a completely different.
Well, look at the work he did with Stephen King. You know, he worked with Stephen King before Stephen King was Stephen King. You know, he wasn't the huge. You know, his name is on anything. Anything he did is going to turn to gold. It wasn't like that at that time.
No, because Stephen King did really well in books and short stories. Or, you know, short films, anthology stuff. But his movies were I remember, dude. It was like, they can't make a good Stephen King movie. And we even did a show about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, yeah, it's because you take a 500-page book and you cut out, you know, 430 pages out of it.
Yeah.
To turn the screenplay into something that's filmable.
Right.
Yeah, you lose a lot. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I love the new trend of the one-season series on Netflix for a book. That is just... And it's so funny, dude. I was so proud of the day. Proud dad moment. My daughter was talking about Tenet to my son. And my son tried to go see it, and he walked out in an hour. Because he said it was boring, it was taking too long. And my daughter looks at him and says, don't you know how to watch a movie? You have to wait for everything to develop, to understand once they put everything together. You have to wait for character. My daughter actually said, you have to wait for character development. You have to understand how all the parts come together. And once you get to that point, and dude, I was like, it's my 14-year-old daughter explaining to my son. Because she's during the judging for the Texas Frightmare Film Festival, she wanted to know. She said, what does a bad movie look like? And I said, come on, I'll show you the one that I've rated the lowest. So we watched it and everything, and then she said, well, what's one of the best ones you've seen? I said, well, let's find the one that I rated the highest. We'll watch that. And I explained to her, you know, this is how character development works. This is the reason sound is important. This is the reason lighting is important. This is the reason pace is important. And, you know, we watched Death Note recently, which is it's one of the only animes that I really, really enjoy. I love Death Note. And, that's one thing she saw with Death Note is, you know, in when you serialize something, you can take time to where one whole episode can be about one character. You don't know how it's going to be into the fall, the full the overarching story, but it's important to be in there. And that's why I love the serialized horror that they have on Netflix and Amazon now, because you can take time to take this huge story arc and develop it. You know, and not bore somebody. You know, the Umbrella Academy is fucking... That's one of the reasons it's so incredible, is because you can take time with each individual character, build them up, and then bring them all together.
I agree. There's also... And with books and stuff, that's awesome. There's also... I think there's a lost art in brevity. Because I noticed this watching certain movies. For example, for You Know It's Awesome, we did... Weird Science, you know, like kind of like a fresh eyes on Weird Science. Sat down and put on Weird Science. I hadn't seen it all the way through in, God, probably 10 years, right? Put on Weird Science. And how does Weird Science start? Two nerds in a bedroom trying to figure out what they're going to do with the weekend. Like, what are we going to do this weekend? And what they decide to do is make a girl, right? They're like, we should make a girl. How are we going to make a girl? And within...
You know, the computer shit. Yeah.
We have a computer, right? Just like a computer. And we'll just plug it into stuff and then go like this. Click, 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 click. Okay. The entire premise makes no sense. You have no sense of like where... Like how did the doll grow?
Yeah.
Like,
how did they develop skin?
They're sitting there cutting out... You know, nudie magazines and pushing it into a scanner or whatever. It's like, but you don't care. It does not matter. It's somewhere between science and magic, right? Like, the power grid shuts down because they got so much computer stuff going on. But you don't care. You don't sit there like, well, I certainly, because I'm sitting there watching it from, again, with kind of the fresh eyes. I'm sitting there watching it being like,
this just makes sense.
It makes zero sense. Okay, but it doesn't matter because it makes all the sense it needs to.
It's not supposed to make sense.
Right. It's total teenage fantasy. It's a John Hughes movie, you know, but she pops out and they're just as surprised as you know, like, as each, they're like, whoa, like it worked. Wow. You know, they got bras on their heads, the whole nine, right? But I'm thinking like, okay, if this was one of those movies that's written by committee, they'd have to have a big, long explanation as to how this is going to work. Like, you know, whether it's printed out on the screens, like in 1984, blah, 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 blah. Because then you think about all the stuff that she does. All the stuff that that Kelly LeBrock does, where, like, she pulls the gun on his parents, and then whenever storm is coming, and they're trying to make the second girl, and they end up making the missile, and then all the stuff gets, like, the chick playing the piano gets sucked out the chimney, like, her clothes get ripped off, and she gets thrown out the into the pond. Yeah. It's like, there's so much bizarre stuff that I'm just sitting there being like, dude, the censors, like, not just censors, but just, like, test audiences, like, it's a classic movie. It's like, every scene in that movie is awesome. But if you think, if you watch it again, you're like, how did this ever get made? Like, it makes, it makes no sense. And that's the whole problem with it, is that it makes no sense. So you'd have, like, eight different corporate drones being like, does not compute, does not compute, does not compute, you know, put some kind of
environment. It would only get released as an independent film.
Yeah.
It would not be able to find a decent distributor.
And you know, just watching it again, it was just like, oh, I remember that. Oh, man, I remember that. So, Ricky, I was like, one of those things you notice in Fresh Eyes is they're cutting out pictures of Kelly LeBrock from the magazines, which means that Kelly LeBrock
exists in that universe. Yes. I have
noticed that before. There's just like so much cool stuff in the background if you're just watching, paying attention. But it wouldn't get made today. That movie, Weird Science, one of the premier 80s movies, wouldn't get made the way it was made.
Right.
You know. And that's a Bill Paxton movie. That's one
of the... Did you notice the part that I've told you about that he, when me and him were having breakfast, that he told me that at the end, the final scene where before he turns into a pile of shit, and he's going off on him, and the kids are like lined up by the stove.
They're trying not to laugh.
They're trying not to laugh. Did you notice that when you watched it?
It is awesome.
He was like, we just got tired of doing takes.
I was talking, you know, on the show, we pointed out how, like, Chet's such a dick. Like, he's knocking her on the head, too, with the shotgun. Like, he wakes him up, like, hits him with the shotgun. She's like, kind of, like, wakes up and is like, what's going on? He's like, bonk. Like, shut up. It's snowing in my room, man. So good, man. So, and I know, like, Dillard just didn't do it, but we were just talking about, like, The Oranges is one of those that's like, huh, quirky, funny, weird story.
Take it and run with it.
Do it. Let's roll. And I'm certainly there's studio oversight in all these movies at some point, but not like there is now.
Right.
Not like there is now.
But that's what I got with Dino.
Dude, this has been fun.
Let's have a drink to him, man. He was definitely
for sure
an icon in so many genres, man. Not just horror.
And if you're hopping on and being like, whoa, they finally played. We're trying to figure out a schedule. We're trying to figure out something recurring that we can make happen. It's just been crazy with the whole virtual school thing.
Right.
Virtual school sucks.
Oh, dude, my daughter finally got to the point where she's like, you know, I'm not getting anything from this. You know, I can't. She told me, she said, you know, at the end of last year, I didn't learn anything. And now I'm expected to remember stuff I didn't learn last year at the end of the year. And I'm getting nothing from it. I'm so glad she's going back to in person.
Dude, my poor kids. My older one is doing okay. Because here's the thing. She can read. She can read. She can follow the instructions, you know, and the teacher's like, hey, do this and that. She still gets stressed out and stuff. But the younger one, she's at the reading level of a first grader who missed the second half of her kindergarten year. Right?
Right.
She can read all right, but she certainly can't read, you know, at least full-on instructions. So then whenever you have the, you know, so you have your regular teacher and then they're in a dual language. So she's got the regular teacher and the Spanish teacher, right? So there's two buttons for two different things. Then they've got the music teacher, the gym teacher, and then the art teacher. And all three of those MFers have a plethora of apps that they use in their own little thing. And my poor little girl, she's like, I swear to God, I posted on Facebook the other day and everybody laughed, but it was not funny. Not funny at all. It's like, your daughter needs to, instead of, like, draw a smiley face and email it to the teacher. It's like, draw a smiley face and then you have to upload it to this app. The app requires permission. Okay? Request permission. You should have gotten an email from the teacher. I did not get an email from the teacher. Email the teacher then. Email the teacher. Hey, teacher, email me the permission. Here's the email permission. You do not have permission. Code invalid. Request a new code. I'm like, dude, this is a six-year-old trying to draw a freaking smiley face for her art class, and I am a parent, and I'm spending hours trying to get this shit to work.
Right.
Like, this is...
It's got to be a simpler way.
There has to be. You have to have a meeting and say, hey, can a pre-literate six-year-old operate this shit by herself? And if the answer is any variation of no, then you need to go back to the drawing board. Because how the hell, what the hell, dude? Like, if my poor wife, because I'm unemployed right now, so I'm actually available to troubleshoot all this shit for 8 hours a day. But my wife, she can't do that. If I was at work right now, then our kids would be just screwed.
Right.
So,
and Olivia has one teacher, and you knew how bad in high school when you had a coach that taught a class. Mm-hmm. He didn't give a shit. Imagine a coach teaching a virtual learning world geography class. Dude, this is no bullshit. The class starts at 1:30. It's the first class after lunch. Olivia will log in at 1:30, and for some reason he logged in at 12:20, and he's already 10 minutes in. And she has not had a single class with that man last more than 20 minutes. But the dude teaches for he talks like he just does not want to be there, dude. You can barely hear him. He's not engaged. He just goes through a couple of things, tells him to draw a map, and says, "Okay, that is it for the day." And just walks off, dude. And it's like, at least if they're one-on-one in the class, he has to be in that damn class the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, he has to do shit. But because he's in virtual learning, he don't give a shit, dude.
It's funny you post that on. It's like world geography. It's not that hard. There it is. 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 Like, it shouldn't be that hard to teach. I mean, there it is.
But he doesn't give. Why would the kids give a shit?
I know.
You know.
It's tragic, and I don't really mean to come. I'm not coming down on the teachers because poor teachers. Poor teachers. I understand. Like, it sucks for them.
There's only so much they can do.
There's only so much they can do, but at the same time, that's one of those things where it's like, we have meetings. You know, like, not me, but, you know, the teachers. We have meetings. Like, oh, this is the best app for the job. And so I'm like, dude, you know, how much easier this would be if you had you have your Zoom meetings, like, you have your lectures live on camera, but if you were just to email me all of the, like a syllabus, just be like, okay, this week we're going to learn A, B, and C, and these are the assignments, and these assignments can be found here, here, and here, and here are the logins in case you get locked out. I'd be like, that would be like a big Christmas present. Be like, holy living fuck. You mean to tell me, because like with my kid, we couldn't get logged into her, it was the music thing. It's like... okay, I'm literally teaching my kid how to play the guitar. Notes, chords, scales, modes, vibrato, legato, all of it. But I can't do that because I have to sit there with an iPad and figure out why I can't log in to listen to her teacher talk about a song. So I'm just like, okay, so my kid can't actually learn something because I don't have permission on the app, right? So I emailed it. So it's like, remember, like, when the teacher forgot to pass out the homework? The next day, she couldn't grade you on it because, like, well, you didn't pass that out, so we didn't have to do it. Like, that's the way I'm like, I. Teacher's probably, like, my daughter, she thinks my daughter's a brat, but she's like, the assignment is log into the app and do this shit. I sent 4 screenshots of permission denied, and I was like, Autumn gets an A, because,
this past week they had virtual class Monday, Tuesday, then Wednesday through Friday they were on their own. They had no virtual class. They had to go in every day, check the assignments, and go ahead and do whatever was posted. I'm like, what kind of shit is that?
We're going to keep talking about this, but we're going to let y'all go.
Yeah, we're starting.
No, good.
Okay, one more thing before we go. October 24th, it's last minute, but Houston Horror Film Festival will be having a pop-up market event at the Marriott Southside in Houston on I-45, going I-45 South. We're going to have vendors. It'll be from 11 to 6, one-day event, and we will be having a couple of guests that we will be announcing soon. So next episode, we'll go into a little bit more about that.
Awesome.
When is this going to release?
Monday, or Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay. Make it Wednesday.
Okay.
See you next Wednesday.
See you next Wednesday.
Keep it scary. Yeah.